Welcome back to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that comes to you today with a heavy heart and a heavy mind. I just want to say that we are, above all else on this show, committed to you, the listener, and bringing you the truth about anime and about the world. And so I feel like I have to come out directly and make a correction from our previous episode. Last episode, we made the statement that the Uzumaki anime was good. It turns out that it is not. It's not good. It is, in fact...
Hold on. No, at the time that we made that statement, it was good. We were not incorrect.
And now new facts have come out about this crisis and prove things otherwise.
Things have evolved.
I feel like we have to be honest with the people. We have to get out ahead of this.
Time has passed and events change as chronology demands. Situations evolve. I will not apologize for statements that I made in good faith, sincerely, which were correct. I won't
apologize.
All right,
well, this is where we have a difference in philosophy. I feel like I owe it to the people to retract that statement, considering current events. I do admonish my past self. He's an asshole. He was wrong, and he should feel bad about saying those things.
Well, I mean, in general, I would agree with you, but in this particular case,
my sponsor said that I have to do this as part of like the recovery program. Okay, I have to make amends to the people, that I've wronged, as part of my anime addiction.
Uh huh. Yeah. Sure. I notice. For somebody who's off the juice, you do have some Gyaru comics just lying around. I can't imagine the temptation isn't there.
Don't look at me! Those aren't mine!
Uh-huh.
Look. Okay. In all seriousness.
I'm deadly fucking serious. I'm deadly serious about this. I watched episode one, and I will not go back on my judgment of that episode one of Uzumaki. I still think... that is a great episode one, regardless of what happens later.
It's true, though. The first episode was really good. I was so into it. And then this one came out. What happened? I mean, we talked about this a little bit earlier off air, but, you know, you have a pretty, I think, spot on theory about, like, how we got to this point.
Well, I think if anybody looks at what's happened and is happening in, at the very least, the American side of this equation, because remember, this is Adult Swim cross Production IG.
Well, I mean, what that means to people who aren't up on the industry like we are.
Industry insiders.
Yeah, industry insiders like us. We're hard-hitting journalists. We cover these things. We're informed. No, Adult Swim is a subsidiary of Cartoon Network, which is owned by WB Discovery.
Let's say was
owned.
Yeah, I think that's more accurate.
Yeah, and because of the constant buyers and sellers and mergers and acquisitions, things have not gone great for any of their projects that require money these last few years. And I think that what we're seeing in the sharp decline in animation quality from that first episode to what they aired this week is a pretty big indicator of that.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, first, the facts are that this was in production for a very long time.
5 years.
A lot of that production was not productive in any way because of the pandemic. There were multiple team members who became deathly ill because of a global virus. Didn't get a lot of work done for a long time on the project. And then after that, coming out of it, there's also the complete and utter dissolution of their production partners. Yeah, I mean, it's like they were fucking screwed every single step of the way. And according to what we all love to attribute historical fact to, vague tweets, it seemed like there was also some interesting insider sabotage happening, though we don't really know what the deal is with that. But it was very clear that this project was abandoned, like, multiple times, at least on the American side, had massive problems like COVID, getting people extremely sick, like production budgets probably constantly changing depending on who, like, whose hands the project was in. And then, of course, more speculatively, the first episode being a concept piece that was used to sell the rest of the project. You know, I can't be 100% on it, but it seems like that is the most obvious reason that this has shaken out this way.
Well, it would stand to reason, seeing as most of the early promotional material we saw for it was just either like early production stuff for that first episode or just clips lifted directly from just that episode.
We didn't see a single thing from any other episode leading up to the release. Like, not a single thing.
I guess we should also point out that they've announced that it's just a four-part series. It's not even a full, like, season or half season. Not even a full core, as
don't
they say.
Don't use that word. Not on this show.
It's just like it averages out to a little bit more than 1 year per episode in production. It's wild that they even decided to run with it like they have.
Well, as the vague tweets suggested that I read, it really seemed like the team absolutely knew what was on their hands, and whoever had like trigger control decided to pull it just out of wanting to have something out there. Even though they knew what the reaction was going to be, they knew what the product looked like, they just wanted to have something out there to just, I guess, just to validate the years and years of their life they did work on this thing, which,
well, I
get
mean, you're saying vague tweets, and I'm seeing a pretty direct quote from the executive producer of the series. We were screwed over in terms of budget and time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not super vague, but it
that's
is still
pretty,
like...
That's pretty explicit. That's about as explicit as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, yes. It's essentially as close to official confirmation as you can get, yeah.
I mean, I guess at least they're trying to get ahead of it and not just saying nothing. I don't know. If I were them, I wouldn't even bother doing a staggered like weekly release for this. Just quietly drop the whole thing at the end of November, maybe.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, it would be better to just say, like, here's episode one, here's episode two. We'll drop the rest later. But I do think it's like, oh, they're still working on it.
Oh, they're still animating.
Yeah, they're still working on it right now. That's what I think.
Oh no. They forgot to do their homework and they're doing it the night before.
Oh, it's tragic. I really don't. I mean, I don't really know what else to say, but like, don't work with these people. They're bad people.
Who, Adult Swim?
Yeah. Warner Brothers, Adult Swim.
Any of them. Don't do it.
Yeah, don't work with these people. You know what they are. It's a fairly small industry.
I mean, it's worth noting that the same executive producer that was in charge of Adult Swim's budget and management contribution to this project is the same guy that personally requisitioned the Rick and Morty anime. So take that information and do with it what you will.
Oh, God. And, you know, what does that say? Unfortunately, Rick and Morty as a global brand is just stronger than Junji Ito as a global brand. And that's just the sad state of the world.
It's a fucking Twilight Zone episode of my reality. It's not fair. Like, it's not fair. People like anime now. And it's all bad, and it sucks.
The monkey's paw.
Okay, all right. Enough about anime. Cheer me up. Tell me about a video game or something.
Well, I could tell you about an anime video game. I mean, if that'll make you feel better. There's plenty of those flying
not
around.
Not really, but it's the best we can do. What do you got?
Metaphor: Re-Fantasio.
Okay, how do you spell that so I can write it down?
You know, the traditional Italian way.
Oh, okay. With lots of hand motions.
Yeah, Fantasio.
Do you do the finger thing, the finger motion at the Fantasio, at the Z?
He's doing the finger thing.
Or is it at the Re?
Re-Fantasio. Metafora. Re-Fantasio.
Metafora. Re-Fantasio. I can do it. You can't do that. I can do it.
I could do it. You can always do an Italian accent. It is never racist.
And it is always funny.
It is always funny. We only have, it's only the Italian accent and the Russian accent. Those are the only ones we're still allowed to do.
Duh.
This is, of course, the new Persona game about tending a vineyard in Eastern Napoli.
See, now, I know you're joking, but I'm 100% on board with that concept. I was already, you know, we were talking about this. I already was assuming that this was some kind of like business management game when you pointed out that that's actually the Atelier series. I cannot keep straight with these faux European naming conventions that anime loves to do. So I would totally be on board with like a vineyard management game, or maybe like a brewery, you know, the the Stardew Valley guy, he's working on that Haunted Chocolatier game.
Haunted Chocolatier.
Yeah, that's the name of his next project. I'm assuming it's about running a chocolate shop that's haunted by ghosts. We're all very excited for a game that's never going to come out because he's just going to keep making Stardew Valley updates for the rest of time.
What would that be? Is like riffing on Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Yeah, the very scant promotional material that he's released about it is essentially almost the same setup as Stardew. You know, you are going to be a guy who, for whatever reason, moves to a new town. You're a chef in training, a chocolatier, as you were.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to this mountain community to learn the ways of chocolate making. And there's an old abandoned factory that you move into, and it's haunted by ghosts. And you can set up like a kitchen and automation tools and make it into a little chocolate factory.
Uh-huh.
That's the concept that he teased like 4 years ago and has not updated since.
Hearing about this stuff and all these other, you know, Harvest Moon likes, it really does remind me that like Graveyard Keeper, I think, is the best one. It's the best one of all of these.
I mean, that's just goth knockoff Harvest Moon.
It's like good. Though it's like really good. It's like fun to play, and it's weird and cool. When you get deep into that game, you can steal the bodies and turn them into zombies to work for you.
Oh man, I've always thought necromancers would make the absolute worst contribution to capitalism. Their power ensures that we continue working forever after death.
Yeah, the Hollywood dream at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Zaslav is a necromancer in some ways.
Fucking techno necromancers. That's what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin Feige. Feige? Kevin Feige.
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 Feige. Feige.
He's a necromancer,
I suppose.
They're buying their likeness rights for the next 300 years.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Oh, man, remember when they put CGI Harold Ramis in that new Ghostbusters movie?
Yeah, that stuff's a real bummer. You know what's actually the sad part about that one is I really can't decide what was more of a bummer, seeing the ghost of Harold Ramis or the actual bones of Bill Murray trying to pretend to be that character. It's like he is a melting wax figure of himself, and it was like really sad to see him like suited up and everything. I think that was supposed to be a triumphant move.
I think that he's just a very sad person. He doesn't strike me as like someone who's having a good time with his life or career. I mean, that's just me.
Yeah, you know, I think that whole era of comedy guys, you know, like I see Chevy Chase And it's just like, man, that guy is like in his own personal hell, isn't he?
Everybody hates Chevy these days.
I think Chevy hates Chevy.
I think Chevy's always hated Chevy. Why else would he take the stage name Chevy Chase? Like, come on.
Mediocre talent, right?
It's the worst area of DC.
Who was it that said that to him? The mediocre talent line?
That was Bill Murray.
Oh, Bill Murray said that. Yes. Oh, what a confluence.
Yeah. Yeah. He called him a mediocre talent.
Mediocre talent. And on SNL, of all things, the true safe haven for mediocre talents.
Right. Okay. We got off topic. What about this?
What was I talking about?
We were talking about the Francis Ford Coppola vineyard management game with anime girls.
Oh, right. Yes. The new Persona game. I am baffled why you got that impression, because this is just, it's not just more Persona in that you're not going to high school or anything. We have dramatically changed the setting, and we have significantly changed certain other aspects of it, but it is Persona.
It is Persona.
We all know what Persona is. There's a calendar thing, calendar mechanic, days change. You're summoning weird creatures to aid you in battle. They have some kind of stupid, like, name. Like, in this one, they're called archetypes. You develop a party of kind of annoying dudes who you have to, like, befriend to upgrade their friendship level. In this game, it's called affection, so it's very literal.
I've always kind of, you know, I was playing Persona 3 Remake for a long time, and I kind of burned out on that again.
Gave up.
I didn't give up. I still have it installed. It's just like sitting there taunting me. It's like, hey, go back to high school, loser, and finish this time. I can't even do it in video games.
Harder than it looks.
Well, it's like, damn, you know, in a game like that, where it is essentially a visual novel in terms of how the story's presented, and it's turn-based, not a lot of player like exploration going on or action like engagement,
not the way you do it.
Well, maybe I was playing it wrong. I don't know.
You do have a history of playing Persona games
wrong.
It
feels like that gets a little bit grating for 70 to 80 hours. That's all I'm saying. Even the older Final Fantasy games, which I am a huge fan of, those capped out like around like 30 to 40 hours if you did everything.
Well, yeah.
They were not these like huge juggernauts we're seeing.
Those games are way more linear, though.
Maybe that's what I'm missing. Maybe that's what I liked about them. As always, I always kind of felt that the calendar format with trying to decide what days you're going to grind on and what days you're going to be engaging with your social stuff on. I always found that to be a little bit of a drag after a while, you know? I think I just missed the instant gratification of being able to constantly progress the story forward.
I think if you have, like, a truly debilitating case of FOMO, then Persona games will cause you to, like, spiral out extremely hard. Speaking
shit,
of spirals.
Maybe that's it, because, like, I'm right in the middle of trying to, like, you know, 100% the map and get all of the points of interest in my, like, finishing up of Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
Or, excuse me, Woke of Tsushima.
The Wokes of Tsushima.
The Wokes of Tsushima. Of Wokeshima.
Wokest of Wokeshima.
Yeah. That one.
I think if you cannot play the Persona games, if you have that particular mental illness, it will destroy you. It'll crush your brain like an empty Pepsi can.
Shit, maybe that's it. Because I feel that comment. I feel that in my soul right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how much that's going to come into play with Metaphor : Rifantasio.
Rifantasio.
It does have a calendar system. Like, it makes that very clear. And in fact, there is travel time in this game. So there is an overworld map.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so you have to account for, like, days on the road.
Oh, days on the road. Because in Persona, yeah, you had, like, it would take travel time to go between, you know, certain locations during the course of the day.
Yes.
Traveling from one area to the other progresses the day forward until it becomes night and you have to go to sleep.
Yeah, for some reason it takes the exact amount of time to take the train from like downtown back to your dorm room, I guess. Your room above a cafe.
I mean, we wouldn't know. We've never lived in a city that has functioning public transport that can be reliable like that.
No, the period of my life I had to rely on buses, there was never a fixed schedule. It was either I'm 20 minutes early or I'm 30 minutes late, no matter what.
It was more of a suggestion than anything, yeah.
But in this game, they make it more dramatic. I think it's kind of brilliant because it's both more dramatic and easier to work with, because there's four stages of the day, and instead of like breaking it up by the hour, you know, mm-hmm. it's sort of like, eh, here's the morning, midday, night. And then it'll take day or 2 days to travel from this point in the world map to the next point in the world map. And I think that is also probably going to be used more narratively than time passing in the, I don't know how to describe it, the core Persona games. This is sort of like calling all the Souls games, even though there's like Bloodborne and Sekiro and now Elden Ring. It's sort of like, well, those are all like Souls games, so I guess this one is still a Persona game.
Yeah.
Persona-like.
Well, I mean, I think that all of the DNA and the structure is there. It's recognizably Persona from everything you've told me and shown me about it, right?
It's impossible not to make the connection, especially the first time you get warped into, like, a weird guy's almost, like, fourth-dimensional chambers where he, like, sits there and, like, tells you what the inner mechanics of the world are. And you like upgrade stuff there, and you work on your archetype layouts and loadouts and all this shit. And then like you spend all this time building party relationships through this time mechanic. And the character is essentially a little blue haired. He's a blue hair prep yet again. And I swear to God, he has two different colored eyes. So we're doing that. We're doing that thing.
He's got that heterochromia going on.
Yep.
People love that. So hot right now.
You better believe it. This is anime as hell.
So hot right now.
Yeah, the other hetero. The desirable hetero. It's the thing that makes me really curious about it is obviously I played the demo. It's not out yet. It'll be out in a few days, but I really didn't get far enough, and I'm not sure they even allow you the most of the freedom to actually explore the things about Persona I like, which is the FOMO stuff, which is like burning time, figuring out what you're going to do with your day or your week or whatever.
See,
and seeing how that plays out. I like that stuff.
I do conceptually like that, but like you said, I have that weird brain bug where I am constantly second guessing my decisions and like, oh shit, did I do this on the optimal day? Was this the correct option? Because I know for a fact that there is an optimal order to do things in those games. People have figured it out. People with worse brain problems than me.
Yeah. Yeah. You just want to play these games with a strategy guide. I feel like that would solve a lot of your problems.
It would, but it wouldn't solve my ego problem.
Nothing's going to solve that one.
Oh, God.
The problem is, for me, my problem is that I already spent a lot of time thinking about that. If, like, in my real life, my actual, like, flesh and blood life, in a video game, I am free from that, so I am allowed to just fuck it up as much as I want. It doesn't matter. I don't have to worry about that in a video game because who fucking cares?
Well, I guess for me, it comes down to like for a 70 hour game, I'm not going to want to replay it, you know? And I feel like as long as there's the option there of did you do this correct option or not? It's like that's begging you to do a replay, and I just can't.
I cannot bring myself to.
The cognitive dissonance is too much, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think I could possibly bring myself to replay any of the Persona games. You know, I've played a fair amount of 3, original 3. I've played all of 4. I played all of 5. And I'm never going to revisit those games. I know that for a fact. But like, again, I find that exciting because it's a huge amount of investment where I'm just letting it ride. You know, I'm letting the chips fall where they may. I like that. I like walking up to the roulette table of Persona and being like, man, I hope I can date the girl I like.
Oh, man, at the very least, I hope that I can get the one girl that I'm interested in Persona 3. That's the only thing I want out of a playthrough.
No, I don't care about the rest of the games, to be honest. I do play Persona games like dating games. You know, in this game, I'm not sure that they're going to have, like, romance. So, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer.
I mean, do they have a tanned, sporty, short-haired girl?
Yeah, but she's a fairy, and she's, like, 6 inches tall.
Hmm, that could be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, so I know some people are into that, but I don't think Persona is freaky enough to go there. I did not get any female party members besides the fairy, who just is your Navi. She's just there from day one.
Okay, she's your guide. She's not even a summon.
No, she's not even a summon. She's just there. She doesn't do anything.
She doesn't do anything.
I do notice in the promotional material there is a very intimidating looking elf lady called Hulkenberg, which is just awful, awful. Why can they not figure this out?
Oh, man. Hulkenberg,
baby.
Is that a typical white guy name? Typical elf name?
Typical German elf. She's got a very intense bangs.
Is her first name Heidi?
It doesn't say a first name.
Just Hulkenberg.
It's just Hulkenberg. It's like a football player from the Archie universe.
The Hulkster.
Hulkenberg. Hey, where's Hulkenberg? Hulkenberg's not around. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know. What I like about the game so far is that they have decided to finally change the battle system. Not a huge amount, but they've finally decided to like do something about a battle system which now feels insanely aged, you know, like truly dated.
Okay.
Playing 5, I remember like, man, how much longer can we cling to this style? And style is really the word for it, because like the only thing carrying Persona games for a while is their extraordinary aesthetic sense, right? I think we could all agree on that.
Yeah, I mean, they got style up the wazoo, style for days.
They're like the most stylish games out there. Like,
well, I
incredible.
Think that is part of what made the menu system from 5 and from the remake of 3 so bearable, is that at the very least, it looks good while you're doing it, and it's got a killer soundtrack.
If anyone is like trying to learn game design and you need to explain the concept of juice, Persona is just juice.
It's all juice.
It's 99% liquid.
Like, it's no nutrients, all sweet, sweet juice.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, when you dry out a persimmon and there's just like a little leaf left. It is just juice. It is the juiciest game series out there. And this one has the juice. It is fun just flicking through the menus. It is incredible. It's just like awesome. And the music kicks ass. I don't like going to a fantasy setting. Feels very regressive to me, but I am waiting for the twist. I'm sure there is a twist coming down the pike.
Here, okay, I can already tell. This is my guess.
Okay,
we're gonna go full circle back to Shin Megami Tensei 1, and it's gonna be revealed that you're in a, like, you know, whatever the Persona World version of a Dragon Quest style fantasy video game is.
I think that's very likely, because they do make many references to a real world. I would not be surprised if we go through the TV or whatever it is in this game and the characters do end up going through a dungeon that is just like downtown Tokyo.
Uh-huh.
I would not be surprised by that at all. Also, these huge, disgusting monsters show up. This is actually the first twist that's actually fun, is you get your party gets attacked by a huge disgusting monster, right?
Classic.
And everybody starts referring to it as a human, like, we're being attacked by humans, and that's fun. That's a fun thing. You know, you get confused at first because you're like, what could they possibly mean by that? And then you realize they refer to these disgusting monsters as humans. And you go, okay, so there is something going on here. Like, there's something fun at the hidden deep within this narrative that's going to, like, pop out at some point and be like, haha, gotcha. They're setting it up very early. And I like that.
Okay, but what if they just never do? That wouldn't be heard of in this industry.
That would be baffling. That would be so baffling. If they just never explain why they call the big disgusting monsters humans, that would be so weird.
I would almost be on board with it, though. You know, it'd be funny at the very least. I do like it when gamers are disappointed.
I mean, I prefer it to just calling them monsters for sure.
The unknown, the others. Yes. The dark ones.
The raised.
Yeah.
The voidlings. Yeah, it's just like, I just feel like going back to straight fantasy settings is so regressive. And obviously this is a plague. We've talked about this in every medium. You know, going back to these fantasy settings that are just pure fantasy in the absolute most, like, cynical sense. Like, impossible to imagine a future, so we just dress up the past as fun.
I mean, you say that, but as cynical as it is, like, Dragon Quest III Remake, 3D Remake, is and continues to be the number one selling game in Japan right now. Like, gangbusters going apeshit.
No, fantasy is... I don't think fantasy has ever been more popular. I think as a genre, it is surging. Now, as a genre, I think it is also incredibly stagnant, which that also supports, like, replaying Dragon Quest III in 2024. That feels like stagnation, dude.
I know. I'm agreeing with you there. I'm just saying, like, maybe I was misinterpreting what you're trying to get at, but it feels like a weird cultural backstep that we're not, you and I, because we're smart and cool. And above
no,
all
we're
of this.
Smart and cool, and we have great opinions, and
yeah.
we're scholars.
collectively, as consumers of media, everyone is kind of like looking backward towards what I can only assume is towards a more fascist worldview. Like, that's what we're getting at. Right? The rise in medieval fantasy must be inexplicably linked to the rise of global fascism.
There's no other explanation.
There's not.
I don't think...
Why else would I be holding a snowball in my hand right now?
I think there is a lot to unpack there that can lead in that direction. I think my problem is, like I said, that I do think we are at a point socially where we cannot imagine futures that aren't just straight up, you know, dystopic. And whenever we do encounter, like, a science fiction property that is just, like, optimistic or utopian in any way, it is treated as infantile, and we don't really have a taste for it at the moment. And I think that is pure social fear, just, like, true social anxiety dripping through the culture. Uh-huh. And I think a retreat back to fantasy, which is, you know, represented obviously over and over again by some sort of amalgam of the past, specifically a white European past, by the way.
We've all noticed.
Yeah, it is something like that. I think they're not all monarchist propaganda. They're not all, like, fascist propaganda. But it does seem to me that the exploding popularity of fantasy, and especially this mode of fantasy, aristocracies and sword fighting and magical creatures and elves and oh, by the way, this game is like, it centers race in such a deliberate way that I almost feel like there must be, again, like the using the humans or whatever, there has to be like some kind of twist coming or some kind of very deliberate like commentary on race, because man, there are like 6 different races. And, like, they make, in the first hour of the game, they make it very clear that, like, there's 6 races, and everybody is super racist against 3 of them. Like, holy shit.
These are the bad races that everybody hates.
Yes, everybody hates these guys. So there's
3... There's 3 quote-unquote bad ones and 3 good ones?
Well, okay, so it's divided into, like, a caste system, basically. There are the elves, you know, who are regular guys with long ears.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, like, they're up at the top. And then there are the regular humans, but slightly bigger, and they have horns. Those guys are, like, at the top. Those are, like, the main guys. But then there's also... like dogs, like furries, or like half furries.
Okay.
You know, guys with dog ears and dog tails.
Sure.
And they're considered like the lowest of the low.
Well, that is pretty par for the course for these fantasy anime, though. I've noticed that a lot, where they'll have like beast men or orcs, right? Be kind of the yes. The punching bag races.
Yes, and they are definitely punching bag races. And then there's like the main character, who is essentially just a guy. I can't remember what they're called, but they're essentially almost completely wiped out. So it's one of those like last of their kind of situations.
Mm-hmm.
And they are considered so maligned that they basically don't exist anymore, except for as like scary stories. And so when people see your protagonist, they're like,
they're Omega Men.
Yeah, like weirdo guys. They actually exist. Everybody hates you. And your main character's like, oh, man, they're like super racist against me. This sucks. Cities suck. And there's like a few more.
Okay, if they're so rare that people don't even think they exist anymore, like, I don't know, maybe answer me this from your perspective.
Riddle
like,
me this.
If you saw one of them just walking up to you and you thought they were a complete myth, would your first reaction be like, hey, that's that made up thing we're all supposed to be racist against?
Well, I think most people are like, damn, I didn't think you guys even like existed anymore.
Yeah, that's... I feel like that's where my personal feelings would end on the whole subject.
Yeah, okay, but there's also, like, lore.
Be like, hey, it's weird that you're here, but whatever.
There's lore around it as well. Where
oh,
they're
there's
considered
lore.
Like a, yeah, they're like a cursed people.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of those.
One of those ontologically evil people.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, they're setting it up. It's a real hodgepodge of different racial analogies. But you could say it's like maybe a mix of between like, you know, Native Americans and like the Romani people, where, you know, in America, obviously, like the mythology of Native Americans are like the savages who would brutally attack the innocent white Westerners, you know,
uh-huh.
Or like the Romani, who are these like wandering evil curse wielders, you know, so it's. Maybe somewhere around there, you know what I mean?
Okay. So, all right, I get you.
Yeah.
I mean, do they know they're, you said they keep mentioning a real world. Are we supposed to think that they're, like, self-aware?
No, nobody knows.
Nobody knows anything.
Nobody's out here talking about, like, oh, I'm in a fantasy world.
Okay.
But there is a guy, the creepy Igor guy of this game does make allusions of like, I think I've reached out through the 7th dimension and made connections to the player, you know, it's that kind of one of those things like,
okay, all right, I'm familiar with this move.
Yeah, the main character has a quote-unquote fantasy book that he carries around as a memento of an old friend, a childhood friend, and the story is of, they only really describe the setting to us, but it's hilarious because it describes a perfect world of like racial harmony. And then they show pictures of downtown Tokyo. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Oh no.
And they literally say everybody's one kind of guy. And that's how you solve racial harmony.
Oh.
It's like, oh no. Oh no. Oh God. Again, I don't know where they're going with that. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. We'll see.
All right.
Plenty of great animation. Lots of animation.
That is good. I mean, are they still committing to the animated bumper scenes?
Yeah, like straight up. There is a bunch of anime in this
game.
That's
awesome. I like it when games do that.
Yeah, within the first couple hours, there is like multiple straight animated transitions, which is like, and they look good, you know? They look pretty good.
Oh, man, speaking of another anime game series with weird punctuation in the title, do you remember those Dot Hack games?
Yes.
For the PS2?
Yes, I do.
What were they called? The game?
Dot Hack Sign?
No, Dot Hack Sign was the anime. Like, that was what the anime was called.
They didn't call the games Dot Hack Sign?
No, it was... Dot Hack Infection. That's what the series was called.
Infection.
Well, it was a four-part series released across four titles for the PS2. We had Dot Hack Infection, then followed by Mutation, Outbreak, and Quarantine.
I'm sensing a theme.
Yeah. Some kind of computer virus. And what these did that I thought was kind of fun was with each game, you also got a little DVD that had like two episodes of a companion anime that was like, you know, the game was obviously what was happening inside the game of the Dot Hack world. And then the anime that came with it was about what the characters were doing in the real world. I thought that was an interesting approach to it.
Yeah, I mean, I fuck with that. That's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool, right? It's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool.
Unfortunately, 17-year-old me did not have money to buy into four titles in an obscure JRPG series for the PS2.
Oh, heartbreaking.
I know. But now I have all this podcast money and I can buy all the games that I want.
Thank God we're raking it in.
Thank God we're rich and successful podcasters. Anime podcasters.
And all we had to do was shit on a bunch of anime.
It's that easy. Everyone should do it. You're literally wasting money by not starting your own anime podcast.
Yes, you should do it, but slightly worse than us, because I don't need the competition, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. All right, you wanna take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
All right.
Guys, so we just talked a little bit about the future of anime video games. I think it's time to turn our attention to a more pressing future. The future of Berserk.
What?
What? Now, Nate, I don't know if you saw, but for the first time, maybe ever, we are getting a Berserk chapter 2 months in a row.
This is actually shocking news to me. You know, I was not paying attention, I guess. I didn't even know that we got a chapter last month.
We didn't. We're getting one this month and next month.
Oh, okay. They've promised us two chapters in a row.
Yeah. You haven't missed one, unless you didn't read that last one.
I don't know, maybe. It's like... Berserk is such a weird spot right now. What are they doing? Where do they go? You know, we know they don't have like a lot of supplemental material left over by Miura to guide where the story's going. So it feels like anything that they do going forward is, I don't want to say will feel unofficial, but
it'll feel cursed.
it's going to feel a little bit cursed, right? I don't know.
I think the only way that they get out of this is, and they do know what Miura's roadmap was. Like they said a lot after he died and people were asking questions about it. Like, yes, we do know essentially what he was thinking, the large beats. And I think the play has to be just get through it as fast as possible. Just get to an ending. Just yeah. Like burn through it. If they try to meander, like, they're fucked.
Don't linger and try and do a whole thing to put your own spin on it. But if they have a roadmap, at least try and get there in as efficient a way as possible. And now that you're pointing that out and that you said that, I am filled with a deep anxiety that we're going to end up with another Game of Thrones situation, because famously the showrunners on that TV show had George Martin's roadmap to where, you know, the series was going to go, and they tried to get there as quick as possible. And
hold on. What we know about that is Benioff and Weiss had a sit down.
May we curse their name?
Well, hold on. Benioff, actually, David Benioff wrote, before I guess he started working in TV, he wrote this really great fiction novel about a kid during the Siege of Leningrad that I actually think is a really great book. I had a lot of fun with that. So I can't find it in my heart to hate him so much. But once he moved into TV, yes, there was a debacle at every stage. But what we know about that is that they had a sit down with George and they talked about what was going to happen. And we all know George's proclivities. I'm pretty sure he probably just spouted a bunch of bullshit. He was sitting across from these guys and they were like, so what happens with the story? And he was like, well, I was thinking about this or maybe this or this or that maybe. And they were just like, yeah, taking notes furiously.
Mm-hmm.
In this sense, I'm pretty sure they have like hard evidence, you know? I think that's the distinction.
I suppose. I mean, again, his death was a weird thing in and of itself in that he thought he was dying for a really long time and then got better from the cancer and then died from an unrelated heart illness.
Yeah.
Very unexpectedly. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, what do we know? What do we know about how his plans changed between...
What do we know and when did we know it?
Yeah. Up and to the left. The bullet came from up and to the left.
The heart attack came?
Yeah.
There was a second heart attack.
From the grassy knoll.
R.I.P. Miura.
Yeah.
We miss you.
I don't know. I feel like maybe he told his crew what his ideas were when he thought he was dying, and then maybe he started going in a different direction in that short window when he thought he wasn't dying before he actually died.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're never going to know. And that's
we'll never know.
That's the bad part about it. That's the heartbreaking part about the whole thing. But at the very least, I do want to see whatever ending they land on, just out of curiosity, right?
I'm never giving up.
No.
I'm with it. I'm with it to the end, no matter what.
No, we're all in there. Sunk cost fallacy. I've spent too much time.
I just find the whole thing to be fascinating.
Yeah. Dang. Well, so they're teasing two chapters in a row. What a treat for us.
Can you believe it? They're outpacing Togashi by like 5 times. Incredible.
I was starting to wonder if it was like a mourning thing, like a respect. Like, oh, we can't have a higher output than Miura would in life. So we have to stagger these.
I don't know what the deal was. I remember reading at some point, like they were saying, we do have chapters ready to go, but it is young animal that was holding it back. And that doesn't seem 100% true to me, but who knows? Who knows?
We are not industry insiders in that sense, unfortunately.
Not in that industry. No.
Not in that industry. Well, dang. Something to look forward to in the manga sphere. Finally. Finally, a good manga to look forward to.
Finally. Thank God. Finally. But in the moving manga world, we do have a lot to look forward to.
Well,
and it's all starting now.
Yeah.
Remember when all the anime premiered? Remember
we
that?
We talked about it. We talked about it we last week. You were there. You listened. Didn't you listen?
And now it's happening for real. I watched, very legally, I watched an episode of Dandadan.
Hell yeah.
Extremely legally this time.
Not in a theater, though.
Not in a theater. But, you know, we make do.
Yeah, that show is the one to keep an eye on this season. No notes since last time. It's great. Yeah. It looks awesome.
It's great. I cannot get ISA shimmying in the opener out of my brain.
Oh, every time I close my eyes.
God damn it. I can't. Somebody made a gif of that and I was I'm cursed now.
I love everything that Saiyan Saru is doing. And I went back and I reread that first chapter after the first episode came out just to do a comparison. And they did such a good job of both being like, I guess, technically faithful to the panel, which has never been super important to me, but also making it look good in such a unique and cool way that it was not able to in the panel. Like the starscape that kind of encompasses the screen when ISA's psychic powers emerge. That looks so much cooler in the anime than it did in the manga. At least to me.
Oh, I think the direction is extremely strong. Like, they brought absolutely their own flavor to everything, while also completely recognizing what makes Dandadan cool to begin with. I think they absolutely made it their own, and it just is fucking great. It radiates confidence and energy.
Mm-hmm.
Really made ISA's, like, sexualization in the probe scene somehow even more uncomfortable than it was in that first chapter, though. I not to go back to that topic, but
I mean,
it
that's,
was still
that's another
a
thing
crazy.
That I considered when I was rereading it.
Which is just
and
wild.
They're actually they're pretty faithful in terms of pacing and imagery and what they show with all of that. I think that Saiyan Saru did exactly what was given to them, you know, and you can say, like, yeah, they could have toned it down. Yeah, obviously there would have been a bunch of weirdos online, you know, having a big old outcry if they did that, though, right?
No, I know. And we talked about this. I mean, we went over the whole thing, but
it's a weird. It's not a great look, but it's something that everybody seems to do these days to get readers hooked in the first chapter, right?
Yeah.
You know, that gratuitous fan service. Which gives everybody...
It's just wild.
Gives everybody a bad name. I don't like it.
It's just really crazy how much fun that show is. And then there's just that moment where it's like, oh my God, are they gonna rape this girl? Oh my God.
Are they gonna hurt that girl?
Oh yeah, everything grinds to a halt for just a second when you're like, I'm getting a really bad vibe off this. And then the show's like, okay, don't worry. No, it's fine. It's fine.
And then the ghost that eats penises show us up.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and then we're like, okay, we're back. The cart is back on
you know,
the rails.
You have the aliens doing Ultraman moves and stuff, and it goes back to being very silly and referential. But for a moment, it's like, I don't like that.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
It's just a weird thing. Just wild. That's a thing.
now, can you believe this? I watched some anime premieres that aren't Dandadan. What do you think about that?
Well, that is bizarre. I don't know why would you do that?
I know. It was a net loss move for me. I regret it with every fiber of my being.
Oh, just one thing before we move on.
Yeah.
You know, there's the whole gag about Takakura being Ken Takakura.
Yeah.
ISA is obsessed with Ken Takakura.
The actor. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ken Takakura is the guy from Black Rain, that Michael Douglas, like, buddy cop movie. And I can't stop thinking about that every time they mention it. It's so weird. I have that stuck in my brain.
That's such a weird pull.
I've watched Black Rain, like, a couple of times. I don't really know why. But that is, I think that might be the only movie I know Ken Takakura from. So it's just every time they mention it, I'm like, the guy from Black Rain?
Well, I looked him up and he is a very prolific actor in Japan. He's very famous actor from Yakuza movies in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it would be like the equivalent of in the American version, if the kid's name was, I don't know, Robert De Niro or something.
Or, sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Something like that. Like, oh, my name? My name's Albert Pacino. Big explosion.
No, I think it's less than that. I think, I mean, his career, he's not a... I think of him more as a Sylvester Stallone, to be honest. Like that level, you know?
Yeah, something around there. Like a guy who is known for playing traditionally masculine, like B-roll genre.
He's a genre guy.
Genre.
He's like a, the tough guy genre. The only other movie I can pull is he was in the very strange movie. Do you know Mr. Baseball?
No.
It's a Tom Selleck movie where he plays a baseball player who gets traded to a Japanese team. And it's just like a fish out of water comedy where Tom Selleck's super racist. And Ken Takakura's in that movie.
Oh, you know what? Here's a good pull. It would be like if he turned around, the kid said that his name was Robert Mitchum.
Sure, yeah, that does kind of light up. Yeah. Robert Mitchum, oh man, I love Robert Mitchum.
I like him, dude. Night of the Hunter.
Oh, that's one of my favorite movies. It's one of the best horror movies ever made. Anyway, that's just, it's a weird, well, I watched Day to Dan and I just think, the guy from Black Rain over and over again. not an important plot point as we move forward, so I guess I just get out of the way in the first episode. Anyway, what else have you watched? What other premieres have you delved into, Nate?
Oh boy. Okay. So last episode we kind of went over our list of things that we were keeping an eye on, right? Out of morbid curiosity, I wanted to check out Tying the Knot with an Amagami Sister, and boy Jesus howdy, Christ. This is like more aggressively bad and stupid than I was even expecting. It was almost a treat. So
why did you pick this one?
Because it was the first one that showed up on recent releases.
Okay. Pure convenience.
It premiered a couple days ago.
All right.
Only one episode is out. And so I thought, why not? I'll give this one a try. I am, in fact, the trashy rom-com guy around here. I'm owning up to it, okay? You know, you're not going to get any argument from me. So I'm just doing my due diligence. I'm playing into the bit, all right?
No, of course. Go for it. Tell us a brief synopsis.
A brief synopsis. We start off at Amagami Shrine, which is tended by three lovely orphan sisters, as you might imagine. And they... for whatever reason, I guess so the plot of the anime can happen, rent out a boarding room at the temple, which is, I guess, something that normal people do. I don't know how often that actually happens. It seems like a stretch to me.
I can't even begin to guess.
Yeah. Enter our main character, I just want to get this out of the way, because it is maybe the only thing that I really liked about this episode. That I thought was like incredibly funny. So the character's name is Uryu Kamihate. Kami spelled like the Japanese word for spirit or god, and Hate spelled Hate, like the English word hate.
Hate, literally hate.
God hate. And we are the first words we are introduced to out of this character's mouth, you know, his internal monologue, as we see him walking up the steps of the temple, is, "I hate God and spirits and think they're all stupid."
Not that God doesn't exist, but that she hates God.
Well, he hates God. Yeah. Well, no, he is a militant atheist. He says, I don't believe in any of this God stuff, and people who do are dumb and gullible. So I think that naming your character God Hate and then having
God-hater.
Our introduction to him, like being that he's a militant atheist medical student, I think that was very funny.
So he's like a epic atheist.
Yes, exactly. He's a joker, baby. He's the Jonkler.
Cool, man.
No, he's decided to take this boarding room at the temple because, you know, he thinks it'll be a quiet place to spend all of his time studying to get into Kyoto Medical University. That's his dream.
Sure.
His dream ever since he was a small orphan boy, because his mom died from a disease. And so that made him want to be a doctor, obviously, right?
I guess.
And so he goes to this temple and meets the three lovely daughters, which are a collection of stereotypes and tropes in like the worst possible way. Like almost everything I hate about trashy rom-com harem like archetypes.
Uh-huh.
We have the busty older sister who kind of has like a childlike affectation.
She's ditzy.
Yeah, ditzy.
She's got the Marilyn Monroe thing going on.
Not just that, but like almost innocent in a way that you would be uncomfortable with a woman of her age. You know, a woman in her mid-20s.
You wouldn't hand her a loaded pistol.
You wouldn't hand her car keys, is what I'm saying. And then you have the youngest sister who, like, her whole thing is that she's, like, uncomfortably sexually aggressive for her age, which is a whole thing that really threw me off when they introduced it.
Okay.
Yeah, that sucked. And then you have the middle one, you know, the middle, the porridge was just right option.
Sure.
Who is the redheaded tsundere.
The default.
The default option.
The default option.
And so, you know, he kind of mingles and they do a series of gags that involve him. That involve one or more of the sisters walking in on him in a sexually suggestive pose. They do that gag like four times in a row.
What is a sexually suggestive pose that he would strike?
tripping on his, like, you know, he has his pants around his ankles and he trips with his butt in the air.
Wait, is he one of those guys that like drops his pants to the ground to piss? Like a little kid.
Well, you know, that's all orphans do that.
Oh, that's an orphan thing. Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. You know, they didn't have they didn't have parents to teach them.
They didn't teach them what a fly is, like what the point of that is.
Anyway, they get into a bunch of arguments about whether God exists. He tries to do his epic atheist rant about how he only believes in science and biology, and anybody
Christ.
Who believes in spirits and luck and praying is a dumb idiot.
Hey, man, like, isn't he renting a room at a temple? Why?
Yes.
Why? Can't he fucking chill the fuck out?
Well, it's much more important to be right than to be housed.
What an absolutely insufferable piece of shit.
Yeah, no, this guy sucks. And they're like, yeah, well, you know, we like doing this whole thing because it makes us feel closer to our dead mom, because she was also like a shrine maiden. So we're kind of doing this in her memory. And he's like, that's dumb. And you're dumb. And I'm glad your mom's dead.
And they're like, that's really hot. It's so hot when he does that.
Well, no. That happens later after inexplicably a bird steals the heirloom ribbon from the middle sister that was given to her by her dead mom.
Fuck, I hate when that happens.
And he goes out all night trying to find it for her because he feels bad about being an epic atheist. and when she goes out to find him, she actually stumbles upon him doing a little prayer when he thinks no one is around. And she's like, oh, actually, he does like God, and that's hot.
He's a hypocrite. That's hot.
He's a sexy, sexy hypocrite. And that's where the episode ends. And coincidentally, that's also where my dignity ends.
That sounds truly awful.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I did not have high hopes. I did not have high hopes for this season or this title in general. So I thought I'd give it a fair shake.
Sure.
And at least watch one episode, you know.
How's the animation?
Bad.
Bad? Not good.
Bad. Yeah. Yeah,
nothing,
not good.
Nothing to write home about.
CGI, buildings in the background, lots of standing in one place, talking with just mouth movement.
Sure.
You know, all the classic shortcuts.
Okay.
Obviously, the first image we're greeted to any of the female characters is him accidentally walking in on all of them changing in the same room together for some reason.
Wait, what?
Yeah. It has all of the red flags in my experience.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
But at least I watched an anime. At least I watched a new anime.
You put in the legwork.
Mr. Only watched Dan to Dan this week.
I watched Dan to Dan. Okay. I got Dan to Dan out of the way.
Mm-hmm. I'm in here in the pits doing the real legwork because I'm out here watching other anime. I watched a second premiere. What do you think about that?
Okay. All right. Well, obviously, you were so let down by the first one. You were like, I can't end the night on a loss.
That is actually pretty much the reason. Like, I cannot let this be the one thing that I talk about this week on the show.
That would be pretty bad.
I've got to pick one other premiere to bring to the table. So it being spooky season, obviously, I gravitated towards Terrified Teacher at the Ghoul School. It's in the spirit of the season. Halloween's coming up. Want to see what these yokai get up to in terms of shenanigans.
Uh-huh. And this is one of the ones I did mention that I had read the first chapter of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how it stacks up.
Well, I don't know how the manga is, but let me give you a brief synopsis of what the episode was like. You know, we have our main character, Norville Roberts, I think his name is, better known to his friends as Shaggy, and he has a dog named Scooby-Doo, a Great Dane.
Sure.
who can kind of talk.
If your name's Shaggy and you get a dog, what else are you gonna do?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, come on, you're locked
and,
in.
You know, he has a van, the Mystery Machine, and it breaks down when he's on a road trip by himself to go see his uncle, his rich uncle. Usually he'd be with his three other friends solving mysteries. But in this case, he was by himself. It's just him and Scooby. And their van breaks down in front of a mysterious boarding school for girls. And, you know, there's a Frankenstein girl and a mummy girl and a werewolf girl.
Yep.
And a vampire.
Sure. Loch Ness girl.
I don't think there was a ghost girl. Not a fish girl.
A ghost girl, a Chinese ghost girl.
Yeah. And so, you know, the principal voiced by Vincent Price, and there's a plot about an evil sorcerer, a ghost of an evil sorcerer, something like that, trying to take over the... Oh, wait. I am being told that that is actually the plot of Scooby-Doo and the Ghoul School. Which is not an anime, I'm being informed. That's not an anime.
Fooled again. Damn, when is this going to stop happening to you?
That was my bad. No, Terrified Teacher at the Ghoul School is about a cowardly layabout who, through the forces of nepotism, gets a job as a teacher at a school for ghouls in Japan.
Yes. Now, this is a direct sequel to Great Teacher Onizuka after he gets fired for all the sexual harassment.
I don't know if they're doing a play on that. They literally introduced the characters by saying that he says, hey, I'm a teacher. I've got a job at public school in Japan, but I got bullied by all the students and had to quit 30 minutes into my first day.
Sure, sure. Teachers getting bullied is a big social problem over there, apparently. Korea, too.
Especially in public school.
Yeah.
And so he says then he spent a year not leaving his apartment until his grandpa got him a job at the ghoul school as a teacher.
Okay.
And so the majority of the first episode is spent introducing us to the class and some of the staff. You know, we have the Gandalf Dumbledore-esque wizard who is the principal of the school. Who's kind of doing his, like, oh, I know more than I'm letting on routine. And I guess I should be upfront, and I was not expecting this going in, but was almost pleasantly surprised. It is a gag show. Like, it's just a straight-up gag comedy.
Oh, did I not mention that when I talked about the
manga?
I don't
think you did. I don't think you did mention it.
Oh.
No, it's a goof-em-up. You know, they're doing pratfalls and pranks and jokes and slap and stick and all that.
Yeah, they're doing that.
Which I was not expecting, but, you know, that's fun. I like that. I'm into that a little bit.
You were expecting, like, a very serious school drama where, like, he has to, like, life counsel these monster girls.
I guess I was expecting something more like Beastars, but with yokai instead of furries.
Right, but, like, the teachers aren't that important in Beastars.
Well, no. But something around there, you know, but with teacher involvement.
Sure.
This, you know, we have the terrified teacher, our main guy, and we have the principal, who's kind of a Chinese wizard Dumbledore. He wears, like, this death mask all the time, and there's some implication that he may have a mysterious familial connection to our main dude. And then we have the class, which is... A bunch. We got a fish guy. We got a merman. We got a cat boy.
Merman.
Yeah, we got a cat-eyed boy in
cat-eyed
there.
Cat-eyed boy.
We got a fox and a tanuki and some other kind of cyclopean shapeshifter. We got a faceless kid.
Sure, yep.
My favorite one is the, you know, the classic... Japanese like wood print of the giants, the samurai fighting the giant skeleton.
Yes,
there's a giant skeleton in a schoolgirl outfit. That's very funny. I like that quite a bit.
That thing has a name. I wish I remembered.
Yeah, they all have names. It's doing a fun little know your Pokemon bit during the episode bumpers.
Oh, okay.
Where it'll give like a little yokai definition for a different one and explain the historical significance of that yokai. Well, we got the umbrella that's just a leg instead of a handle and has a big eye. Classic one.
Yeah.
We got, what else? We got a ring girl. We got a ring girl in there.
Of course. You gotta have one.
Mm-hmm. A wizard. Just, they call him a yokai, but he says, like, yeah, I'm a wizard. Like, that's my race. My race is wizard.
I'm a fantastical creature. You know, a wizard. I guess after watching The Lord of the Rings, the wizard is, like, a fantastical beast.
Yeah, kind of.
They're not normal guys.
Gandalf's kind of like, he's kind of an angel, I guess is his thing.
Yeah, he's like an angel if an angel was a cryptid.
But also a wizard.
But also a wizard. It's like if a cryptid smoked dank.
Hell yeah. What else? We got a girl with a really long neck, like a really long neck. We got six-armed girl. Trying to remember some of the other ones.
Gyaru.
Yeah, just a Gyaru. just a tan person.
My race is Gyaru.
They're all in there. I generally had a pretty good time. I like the jokes. I like that it was a gag thing, like I said. The only thing I'm a little iffy on is that the episode kind of culminates in this reveal that Terrified Teacher is... like descended from the most powerful exorcist in Japan. right?
Oh, Abe no Seime.
Yeah. That's what they call him. They call him Seime.
Yeah, that's the guy. That's the historically the most powerful Omyoji.
Yep. Well, he is a descendant of that guy.
Oh, they're all descendants of Abe no Seime. Every other character in manga or anime is directly related to Abe no Seime. It's like how everyone is somehow related to King Arthur in like Western fantasy.
His name is Abe Hiroyuki. But everyone calls him Seime as like a way to tease him.
Sure.
Because they think that he's, you know, they think that he's a shitty dude, but actually he's the most powerful dude.
And he wears that tall hat.
No, he doesn't wear the hat.
Oh, come on. You got to wear the tall hat.
No, no hat. Ugh. No hat for him.
What a loser.
He's got nerd glasses. Basically, after we set up the class, the premise of the first episode is he notices that there is one class, you know, one of the classmates is missing, and they do a funny gag about how she hasn't been to school since the first grade because she's been playing a video game. She's a ring girl that's become addicted to playing a Final Fantasy 14 knockoff. Yeah. And so he goes to her house to try and drag her back to school.
That's so weird, by the way, like that thing in a lot of anime where teachers will just go to your house.
Oh, yeah. It's wild.
What the fuck? Hey, teachers, leave those kids alone.
Not only do they have parent-teacher like conference day at the school, but it's like expected that at least once per like semester, the teacher is going to drop by every student in their homeroom, like drop by their house just to say hi and like talk with their parents for a while. That's insane. If they did that in America, people would be shot left and right.
Stay the fuck away from my kid, dog. I think also, you know, we have, so that's one of those really weird things about having like one teacher per semester.
Yeah.
Where everyone's kind of in the same class. So it creates this like weird little unit. Whereas in a, you know, in American public school, we all just splinter off constantly.
We're always getting shuffled around.
Yeah. There is no unit in American public school. So we never develop any kind of connection, unless it is like very deliberate. Mm-hmm. And even then, it's like, stay the fuck out of my house, dog. We have a professional relationship.
But yeah, he ends up, you know, she uses her ring powers to try and haunt him out of her house. And he accidentally uses his super exorcism powers to forcibly enter a female student's house and kidnap her away from her home.
Jesus
and bring
Christ.
Her to school. Teacher,
leave those kids alone.
I guess I forgot to mention the probably the most concrete and troublesome aspect of his character is that he's obsessed with classic school uniforms. And his reasoning for wanting to get this particular student back to school is because, mind you, she's a ring girl.
Let's say it together. She looks,
good.
She looks cute in a uniform. In the uniform.
Yeah.
I did tell you that this comic, like, it starts off with some really questionable teacher-student shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is nowhere near as egregious as, say, something like Gyaru Gohan, which is an explicit romance between a student and teacher.
Oh, so, yes. This is not actively advertised as like an age gap rom-com. So it's not quite as egregious.
But yeah, because she's a ring girl with long black hair, he has, I guess, a fetishized view of the Japanese schoolgirl and begs her to come back so he can see her in a sailor uniform.
Hey, uniforms? Nah. Not even once. Knock that shit off. They're not good. Stop it.
I think the Kill la Kill has the definitive statement on whether or not uniforms are a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. That is the strongest statement Kill la Kill makes, is that uniforms are fascist. And if you argue against Kill la Kill, I will argue against you.
Kill la Kill remains the absolute goated number one.
Fucking undefeated.
Okay, that's what I did. Those were my premieres. I hope you're happy. I did this for you, dear listener.
All right. Good, good. That's good stuff. We'll continue on. I'll probably have a lot more. I'll dive into a lot more by the next episode. So we'll have cleared out some of this stuff. At least we've knocked a few off the list, right?
At least I never have to go back to tying the knot with an Amagami sister. I don't even need to know which one he ends up with. I don't even care. I hope they get divorced.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think I'll be going back to ghoul school either. Maybe I will go rewatch that Scooby-Doo one though.
Yeah, why not? I went and reread like a bunch of my manga recently because I just could not find any new manga to connect with recently.
I just couldn't do it.
And I was just like, well, if I can't find anything new, I'll just read something that is actually very good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I reread all of To You, the Immortal.
Hell yeah.
Which remains one of the best things that exist in the space. I still think the first episode of the anime and like the first three chapters of the manga are like one of the tightest and most emotionally effective short stories that have ever been told in this medium.
Some people may recognize this series as the English translated title To Your Eternity.
Yes, To Your Eternity. Not My Immortal.
Not My Immortal. Which is a literary masterwork that should always live on in the minds of people. No, this is a much lesser work. It's still worth your time, though.
It's worth everybody's time. It is just absolutely blows past like every possible barrier that anime and manga generally set themselves up for. God, it's even, I just reading it through again, just like straight through, it just reminded me like how incredibly effective that shit is.
I mean, I think the first chapter itself is just a perfect little short story, like contained to its own thing.
It's so incredible. I mean, it's like, God damn. I mean, I have said before, like, I am very sentimental, so like tearjerkers work very well on me. But man, it's just the absolute mastery of the form is just so fucking good. Y'all, you have got to get up on To Your Eternity.
To Your Eternity.
To Your Eternity. I always call it To You, the Immortal.
Yeah, we know. We know where you sourced your manga, Mr. Legality.
I'm not making any comments about that. I will say I prefer when they call him Fushi to Immo. I think calling him Immo, like in as in immortal, is like kind of, it just sounds wrong to my ear. I think Fushi is a better name.
Well, we can agree on that.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's enough for today. Handsome, beautiful, tall, sexy listeners. I'm not afraid to say it.
All right. Calm down.
This is how we get the people in. Now go do the things that we ask you every week. Please follow us on Blue Sky, like us on Apple Podcasts, check out the TikToks. I'm still putting them out. Do all that stuff.
He's gonna put out a bunch more in rapid succession. He's really gonna pick up the pace. He's told me that he is going to pick up the pace.
Anyway, that's it for today, folks.
Wow, that's some good stuff.
Okay, all right, here we go.
Bye. You need to have the mind of a child to make something like E.T. the Extraterrestrial, you know?